I'm Jessica Vanderzand, I'm the VP of Administrative Services for Network Health. I've been with Network Health for almost 10 years, had various roles, started really in the case management space until about 2011 when us and a lot of other plans were like, we really need to get more proactive about compliance. So that's when I transitioned into the compliance department, and since then have continued to grow and develop in that department. And then most recently, in March, we added a government programs department to our organization. So right now it's a department of three, but we continue to grow that. We'll talk a little bit more about Network Health, which will explain why we added that department. But on the topic of internal audit also reports up through me with a direct line to the audit committee. And then a little bit different than a lot of other plans, I also have the strategic project management office reporting up through my area, as well as product development.
I'm Manji Singh. I'm your current unbeaten Health Plan Alliance cornhole champion. along with my partner who left. But so I was telling Kristen, next visit, whenever it is, guys, come prepared. We would love to meet you guys again. I've been in IT for more than 20 years. I've been in healthcare for around 10 years. I've been in senior management for 8 years. I joined Network Health 1.5 years ago, and I could go on about my midlife crisis, but I won't. I was in Florida. We went to Wisconsin. I wanted to see how real people live in real winter. So far, it has been fun. I've done 2 half marathons, 1 more second, 2 snowshoe races, snow tubing, hiking. We're doing 1 full marathon. We are a part of relay team this next weekend. So it has been great.
All right, so our agenda this morning is there. We'll just skip right to the next slide and introduce you to Network Health. I don't know how familiar you are with Network Health, so we want to give you a little overview. That star there is where our primary office is located. So we're located in really northeastern Wisconsin is where our primary office is. However, a couple of years ago, with change in ownership, we also went into the southern area in Wisconsin. So we're co-owned by 2 providers, 2 large systems in Wisconsin. Well, one is Ascension, which some of you may be familiar with. That's really a nationwide thing. And then there's Freightert, which is really local to the southeast Wisconsin, Milwaukee area. As a health plan, we really, our brand is really focused on being part of the community. So Manji mentioned the marathon. We sponsor the Fox Cities Marathon. We're a big sponsor in the Fox Cities Marathon. We're really all about, as an organization, being there right in the community. For example, a lot of our branding and a lot of our advertisement uses our people that work right at Network Health. So not the focus of this presentation, but we've got great videos out there if you ever want to check a little bit more about Network Health. As far as product lines, we're on the exchange. I know some of you are sharing the challenge that there's not too many plans left in our area. We'll be 1 of 2 in some of the counties, and we're really still on the cusp of making the final decision as to whether we're going to stay and where we're going to stay in that market. We're also a Medicare Advantage company. You can see our membership there, over 63,000, looking to continue to grow that. PPO products primarily. We also have 1 special needs plan. And then we're also in the self-funded space. So we've got some small group self-funded products, a few larger groups, and then, of course, standard group at our organization. You're quick. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. All of that information is there for you as well.
So we wanted to come here. We wanted to share how we started. And one of the goals was to learn from some of you who already have a matured information security program in place. So on the learning part, I can totally see we're doing good. Last 2 days have been great sessions. Adding on to what Jess said, so in 2015, we separated from our parent company. So our journey started then. CIO was hired, Tim Riley. Kathy knows him. He's my boss. So he was hired. We created, between 2015 and 2016, we created a data center. We were running our servers in the closet. We moved them to a data center. We created a DR site. And in June of 2016, I was hired. In first quarter of 2016, we did a third-party risk assessment. We had them do an assessment on our IT environment, and we picked five key applications, depending on several factors, number of users, third-party accessibility, how much EPHI is getting created, stored, transmitted. So they spent more than 2 months meeting a lot of our associates, and then they put together a risk assessment profile for us. And they listed down areas where we were doing good and where areas where we could improve a lot. So they had this whole scale based on likelihood and the impact and the residual risk. They rated us from not secure to secure. They rated us in the middle as moderate secure. So we looked at it when we had the report. I was hired by that time. We looked at it and we started planning how we're going to address these. They listed down their deficiencies in three categories: high, medium, secure; high, medium, low. So once we have that in hand, we created a kind of a three-year roadmap. At the time, we were not really thinking of 3 year. The goal was to go one quarter to another and try fixing as many things as we can. So we looked at it, we said, all right, in year one, we're gonna take care of some of the foundational things, which commonsensical things, which we should have it. And then we got into the whole debate of NIST, ISO, HITRUST. So after a lot of debate, we decided, let's just go with the SANS Top 20, so at least we have something in place, and we'll continue working towards HITRUST because that's the golden bullet for everything. So I'll share some of the things which we did on the year one itself. We wanted to have some quick wins without creating a lot of discontent, although I kind of like it. The more people hate me, I know I'm doing my job. we locked down USBs. That was the first thing we did. It wasn't that popular a decision because some of these departments had the valid need to have USB open. When your salespeople are going someplace or some of your care management people want to share data, they wanted to have that. But majority of people did not have any need to have USB open. So what we did was we locked it down, but we created a process. If you need a USB access, then you have to go through our process. You need to get approval from your manager, and he or she has to submit a ticket to us, and then we'll have you sign an attestation saying that you realize this is really important for you to not misuse it. So that was a good process in place, so we have it now. We locked down some of the Yahoo, Gmails, we got some disturbance in that also, but the good thing which has worked out in our favor is we have a very strong support of our senior management. So that's like half the battle won in first place. So that's what we did. Then we implemented multi-factor authentication. It was a huge task also. We are around 500 associates. More than 100 or 150 work from home. And then we have, last year we had 70 consultants also. So it was a good implementation. One thing which I'm enjoying, which I love as part of my midlife crisis, there's never a dull moment here. So we're loving that. So we rolled it out to consultants first. The goal there was to roll it out to people who cannot really complain. They care about their paychecks and iron out all kinks in the process. So we rolled it out to IT first, then to consultants, then to our work from home people, and then remaining people. And one of the things which you want to do is, if you are gonna build your security program, we'll keep sharing some of the lessons which we have learned. So any new tool, if I roll it out to the senior management first, I have seen that that becomes a lot more effective, because then when people are, if somebody's complaining, they're going to go to their manager or director, but manager or director will say, I have it. It's not that big of a deal. We have to do it. That's why we're doing it. So that strategy has worked out good for us so far. We have this email threat prevention. I'm looking forward to Aaron's presentation on the phishing, but that's all of us know that's a huge challenge for everybody. So we have the software tool, Mimecast, which we're using, which is, we use Office 365. So it's sitting in front of my Office 365. Every email goes through that. So they have a very good algorithm in place. They're catching a lot of spams. But like all of us know, there is no tool which is going to stop 100% of it. But if it finds something which rates high in their algorithm, it holds it. And now it's up to user to allow it, reject it, or permit it going forward also. So there's some challenges. A lot of people did not like it. We got some feedback from some of our management also, like, what are you doing? Why do I have to go to this another place to release some things? But so far, it's working out good. We're using their URL protect also. So if an email has a link to URL, they put a wrapper around it. So when you click it, it's going to hit their web server first before it goes out. So I'm going to share our whole philosophy of defense in depth. So this is another layer which we have put in. Then we implemented our SOC also. We're a small company. I envy Wyatt. I have like one full-time InfoSec person, and I have one consultant, and me, it's CISO is like just one-third of my role also. So we outsourced the 24/7 monitoring of network operations. So that's the ActiveEye. We have around 200 servers, but we started with our core servers, which are monitoring in traffic coming in and out, AD servers, et cetera, web servers, et cetera. So now we have people who are actually monitoring our traffic. So God forbid if a ransomware or something comes in.
So, Manjit, can you talk a little bit about your 24/7 service? Have you gotten enough metrics on it? It's something I've wanted to do for a long time, and it's a tough sell. Sometimes people talk in terms of the false positives that come through. They're more than happy to hand you those false positives, and then you have to figure them out. And then by the time you figure them out, you could have been doing it yourself. So it's kind of a mixed bag, and I'd be curious to hear your success or opinions.
Well, since we did not have anything, now we have something. If we just look at it from that perspective, it is a success. But you're right, in the beginning, there were a lot more false positives until they started tuning their logs, AlienVault. AlienVault is the same they are using. But in the beginning, I wanted to be more on the caution side. So I was. We've told them, if anything comes in, I expect you to call me also, irrespective of what time it is. But now, with their experience of our systems, our network, our servers, it's better, right? And again, I have the budget problem also. So since I can't really afford my own people monitoring it, if I did not have the budget option, and if I can find skilled people, I would prefer having it myself. But we have an open position for 6 months. I have not been able to find anybody. So I think this is a good option.
I agree. And you're in a position right now where, like, we are very quietly talking about it, just my security manager and I. We don't know if it's a route we're going to go, but we do have 3 dedicated people to SecOps. But at the same time, we're 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. Right. You know, we're not 24/7, so we're looking at that supplemental. Right. And we have the same issue. Okay, what do we want to get? And we're afraid of getting bombarded with false positives. I mean, it's essentially what happened to Target. Their sock sent them something, but it was alert fatigue and they didn't catch it. The other side of that is preparing and getting ready. What metrics do you want them to monitor? So your position is a perfect position. And we're hesitant to say anything in front of our SOC team because they're going to start to be like, wait a second here. What?
What's that?
They have a lot of pride.
Right, right. So I think that this would be something I would love to have a deeper conversation about moving forward as we start to decide if we want to move that route, getting your opinions on how it's worked for you, getting your opinions if you guys are going to move that route, and having a collective discussion with just some of the technical folks on how that's worked out thus far. Because we're interested in it, but we're not moving that direction yet.
And one of the core things, like I'm a geek, but at the end of the day, I look at me more as a business guy. We're not really into security. That's not our bread and butter. We are into healthcare. So I want to outsource that option where we can leverage these SOCs because that's their bread and butter. So I'm expecting them to have better threat intel also. Whatever is going on in the world, they should be looking at it. They should be tuning their algorithms, their signatures in an ideal world, and then help us.
I can come closer to you. So, the other comment I'll make too is your organizational situation helps to dictate that. I know, for example, coming to Cook Children's, operating budget and capital, they're not an issue. It's the headcount. And that's because we compare ourselves against other children's hospitals, and we look at metrics like the number of administrators per bed and things that are business-focused that is very important to our leadership. Right. So I know I'm not going to get headcount.
Right.
I'm not going to let staff go.
Right.
But what I may want is to think very carefully about what I want them to work on. How do I work smarter but not harder? And so that for me is something that, you know, I'm looking at, and I've, you know, did engagements with like SecureWorks, which Dell acquired. They'll come in and do a 60-day free implementation at no cost to you just to let you see if there's any value in even doing that. So if nothing else, maybe you can find out if you got one of those advanced persistent threat guys in your backyard or something like that. But in any case, that's kind of another comment, at least from my perspective, that I'm interested in.
So far it's working great. So they've identified some smaller like malware kind of activity, but they were helpful in identifying one big issue where one of our vending machines, which is managed by a third party, got a virus in it, and it was connecting to somebody in Russia or wherever. We were able to track that. It was a vending machine. Since they take the credit card, so it was great. So it is working out great. Especially when you are on a shoestring budget, that's a way to go. So the other things they did it and identify some process related deficiencies also, how we are. How we are terming people, or how we are giving access to people. So we made some process changes. We made sure we have a better auditing in place to handle those also. Earlier, there wasn't a consistent process when everything was dependent on a manager to tell HR and tell IT. So we streamlined that process also. That was a big win. We still have some challenges on the consultants. I wish there was some magic bullet which can give me the control of knowing when somebody's coming in and somebody's leaving.
Just to speak to the consultant piece again, it's not on the regular that we have 70 consultants at Network Health, but we have a huge portfolio of projects this year. So Our president joined our organization in October of last year and identified some opportunities that she wanted us to focus on from a strategic standpoint. And one of those core projects is insourcing what was traditionally outsourced for Medicare operations, so your claims, your enrollment. So it's a huge undertaking, which is why we're bringing in so many consultants, which really increases the importance of the security and the oversight of those that access and that making sure that we terminate those. But I just wanted to speak to that because you're probably thinking 70 consultants, what the heck are you doing in your organization? That's certainly not the regular, but we did a few other large-scale projects. We had a huge project budget this past year, which won't be the case next year. We need to settle down and focus on our oversight.
So like I was saying, we are a small company. I wear multiple hats. The infrastructure team is with me also, although the security team is two people only. But since the infrastructure team is with me, I have a good control on some of the Qualys kind of vulnerability management, patch management, change management, etc. So we put that in place also. So we had the tools, but we were not really utilizing them. So now we're trying to get better at making sure somebody is looking at the Qualys scans, and patch management is a lot better in process. We were fine with the WannaCry. Not that I want to jinx anything, but we have a good process in place for that. The managed security service provider already talked about, the company who's managing my SOC. IT service management, we have ServiceNow in place. We still have two ticketing system for the business requests. They are coming through one system. But the goal here is down the road, maybe year two or year three, we can have one ticketing system only. But any of my infrastructure related or IT help desk kind of issues are getting documented or taken care of through ServiceNow. ServiceNow has a lot of modules. That's another goal. We want to make sure we start using their CMDB, et cetera, in year two or year three once we have taken care of some of the low-hanging commonsensical things. Policies and procedures, this is not getting recorded, right? Oh, okay, so I'm not going to say that. That's my favorite piece, policies and procedures. Yeah, I love creating those policies and procedures. So we made sure we're updating them, and Jess helped me with those, since I really love those and she hates them.
She's a doer in compliance. We're documenters, so it works. It's a good partnership. But.
So we made sure anything which they identified as part of their risk assessment, we have taken care of that. We have policies in place. All new hires have to go through those policies so people know that they have to follow these policies. And goal is to have those procedures in place in year two or by year three also for all of them. We have some of the current projects we have is mobile device management. We started looking at, again, the budget was the issue, so we started looking at ActiveSync, which we were using today. Now we're finding some challenges with that, so I'm looking for another tool. We're going to end up rolling out Mobile Iron soon. MFA for cloud services, we have Salesforce, we have Office 365, some other SaaS applications. So right now, some of the cloud applications, we have locked them down so it can be accessed through our network only. The thought there is, in order for you to come to my network, you already have, either you are on my network physically or you are authenticating through MFA. So I already have a dual factor authentication there. But in a normal, ideal world, I want to open that up for my business folks to be able to access it from outside. So the next year, we're going to have a MFA for Office 365, Salesforce, et cetera. SANS Top 20, I talked about this. The whole debate, I enjoy it. And it's good to hear one of the top executives will hear about HITRUST. And they'll say, Maji, you have to go to HITRUST. Then another one will hear about NIST. And then we have to go through NIST. So my answer always is, all right, let me take care of the basics things first. And then we'll come up with some way of organizing these controls at the end of the day, that's what these tools, these frameworks are doing. So the things are common. The issues which we have to address are almost common across all of these frameworks. Some of them are giving you a better way of organizing this. So that's why in year two, which is next year, I want to start implementing SANS Top 20. And this will give me an opportunity to use our service now also, which I'm sure is going to help with the HITRUST certification. It's incident response plan. Jess is going to talk more about it. But we have challenges here. That's what I was referring yesterday also. So we've hired a couple of consultants. So I have that 90-page document, which I don't think I can really use it if there is an incident going on. So that's why I was more interested in somebody else talked about tabletop exercises also. So I got some ideas on that, but we'll keep refining that. Business continuity and disaster recovery, that's another big initiative we have going on. I think from an IT perspective, we are doing fine on the disaster recovery. We have a data center. I have a lot of redundancy built in a lot of things. But on a business continuity, we're still going through that. So we did hire some consultants who helped us put a basic framework in place, but we're still working through that. We have weekly meetings with business owners. Kristen, Aaron needs mic. Hopefully, if you put a podcast, you're gonna take out. You're gonna edit this, right?
I just wanted to comment on the tabletop exercise that you just mentioned, especially if you're looking at HITRUST certification. I went through a wonderful exercise. It was called CyberRx. It was back in 2015. I don't know if anybody has heard of that, but if you Google CyberRx, you can literally replay the tabletop exercise. But HITRUST partnered, I think it was with the FBI, InfraGuard. It was a number of major cyber players, if you will. And it was a live tabletop exercise conducted over a video conferencing session.
Nice.
And so each basically site would have kind of a facilitator that would help to aggregate, you know, the logistics, the PR and marketing people, and kind of talk about what did that exercise mean to them and put it into the context of their particular organization. And so little by little, they would reveal scenarios and variables to the scenario live, and then you would react to them. And so it was a really neat experience, and then they would, you know, maybe provide a little bit of coaching and recommendations as to things you should have been looking at. Wasn't scored or anything like that. Now, I haven't seen where they've done another one since then, so I don't know if it's something they're looking at doing or not, but I would be on the lookout for it because it was incredible. It was fun, but it was also incredibly valuable as well, especially with that, you know, kind of sort of statewide live aspect to it.
No, thank you for sharing that. That we're certainly going to watch. That's one of the challenges we have, and Jess will talk more about the Vice President Council we have, which she chairs. We would love to run one scenario in one of that council and build some kind of confidence and momentum and continue building on that.
Hey, Manji, on your data redundancy, I'm assuming you're doing a hot site someplace, porting data over through fiber at night, right?
Right.
What I'm having a problem with, of course, all of CORE is going, claims are going. We've never archived. We're waiting on TriZetto on that. But anyway, data on people's network drives, emails that just keep growing. I can't get it over in time. So when I'm telling everybody, yeah, we're backing up everything, we're backing it up on site, but to port over to my hot site, I can't. It just continues to grow. Do you have any thresholds? If your personal drive is over this, it's not going to go. Start cleaning up. Are you guys cleaning up? How are you handling the growth?
I don't really have that particular challenge. I have enough space on the SAN, and we are active. So it's a block level replication going on.
So I
don't really have that challenge. But we have one. We have a list of questions which we want to ask you guys. One of the challenges which we have is how do you make sure this EPHI, which exists across multiple applications, files, file servers, etc., what are you guys doing? We'll tell you what we're doing, and that's one thing which we want to pick your brain also.
Yeah, I have a great product. Just before I forget, it's called Veronis. and it searches through there and gives me alerts. Somebody has a document that has Social Security number in it, so then I go to it. Oh, it's a medical record. Put it here. Bronus is a great alert
product. So
it's
just in the inbox, it's scanning inboxes and telling you that information?
File servers. All your files, documents that they've saved.
Okay.
And we have, it's called Event Sentry that checks emails. Now, the problem is it checks the email after it's left the building.
Oh, only?
Yep. Yeah. We've put in an enhancement request. We'd like to check it before, but at least I do know it's out,
yeah.
And then we can recon from there.
Which
it's
is still
not the
better
best.
Than not
still better
anything.
Than, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aaron has it.
I was just going to comment, having done some of that analysis in a former life, we looked at a lot of tools that were basically built into the storage systems that we were using. And so if you haven't already, which you probably have, but like things like deduplication, also looking at from an aging perspective, if the file hasn't been touched in 5 years or 10 years, depending on whatever your, you know, life cycle storage policies are, it needs to be moved into far offline storage and then marked for even eventual destruction based upon your destruction policy. So we looked at first trying to get a handle on that. To your point, I'm not familiar with that tool, although I have a vendor that keeps calling me talking about that product. We are looking at, as part of an overarching identity and access management strategy for the upcoming fiscal year, which starts in October, investing in a system that will basically, as each individual user within the enterprise touches a file, it requires them to identify the sensitivity and the type of data that it is. So, you know, each file that's out there has metadata. That metadata can be a very powerful tool to figure out what to do with it. And so as users over the course of time start to touch their files, you're going to get a very clear picture from kind of a heat map perspective, what people use on a regular basis, what they don't, and most importantly, especially all the sensitive or PHI data, now you can start to move and do the holy grail, which is to have all the PHI, you know, basically saved off onto a separate server automatically by virtue of having, you know, data copy processes and stuff like that running. It's part of the SailPoint. So if you're looking at SailPoint from an identity and access management perspective, it's one of the tool sets within their system. And I have the flyer. I can send that to the group.
I love Mike. I'd never want to give back Mike away. Oh. That's why Jess is there.
We have the same struggle with the growth of the data. We, at this point, I just authorized $1.7 million because we have storage backup at 80%. So we have the dedupes, we have the hard drive. We implement every technology that's possible. The data just grows too fast. So one of the things we are working on is the documentation retention. So we are looking into the policy and how many years we have to retain the data and how we'll be able to, you know, clean up the space so we can reutilize some of the hardware we have and make sure the investment makes sense.
Right. We're looking on the retention also, not only documents, but the emails also.
I have a successful story to share with my previous employment, not the current one. My current company is going through the same struggle, and I recommended our team, and we are starting the process. We call that record and the documentation retention, and it was just Susan just said from my previous company. So that was a corporate initiative. That was a two-year corporate initiative. Was not just to reduce the cost of the storage and resolve that problem, also to reduce your kind of a your risk of your liability. So we did the, we invited some consultant, we had a project team, did analysis on all our product line regulatory requirement, define different years of retention for record, how long you can maintain, how long you're required to maintain this. And then we define what is record. So what is business record? Because from the employee perspective, everything is related to my work, it's record now. So we had a clear definition on what is record and different category cover all of them, and then how many years for each category, and then department by department. And then we did the all the purge. So that reduced a lot of risk of, like, you know, you may, that actually we learned from a failure, like, you know, many years of, we got in a lawsuit, many years of email got into evidence, actually got us in trouble. So, and that one, I kind of use that one as an example to tell my current company, saying what we need to start it. Our legal and compliance department are reviewing it, and they're deciding on it. But it's always hard at the beginning is how you define what is your business record and how many years you do need. It's not you want. Yeah. I feel that was very successful for my previous company.
Personally, I wish there was these laws were so black and white and this to say, like, okay, you can keep this for X number of years, but they are not. That's where the challenge becomes. But I guess we'll all have to keep working through this challenge.
All right, so a little segue over into the privacy and compliance program. And the reason we're sharing this with you is because it really ties closely to how you should structure your security program. So Manji, he said he started about a year and a half ago. After the coal fire assessment, we began touching base quite a bit more frequently because there's so much crossover between privacy and security. We've had a very active privacy and compliance program for many years, but with a shared services model, so kind of the opposite of what's happening within Wyatt's organization, where they've switched over to that shared services model, we transitioned IT internally. As Manji mentioned earlier. So with that, we had to take security in, which was something that was a little disconnect in the past between the two. But our privacy program is only as strong as our security program is, because otherwise my team is quite busy if there's incidents that are created. So Manji, as he mentioned, does not like policy and procedure. He's very, very good at implementing tools, very good at speaking and enforcing a lot of what we need to accomplish from a security perspective, but the documentation and the organization of the plan is not his favorite thing in the world. So that's where...
Trying not to say that on record.
Off the record, I said all those things. So, Kristen, you can help me with that. So when he came to me and said, we've got this coal fire assessment. We're working on the high-risk categories of what we need to implement first. I need a program, though. I'm being asked, like, what's my program? And I'm trying to think through what that looks like. And so I said, well, I'll share with you what we do from a compliance standpoint and how that structure works. So if you think about anywhere it says compliance officer or compliance inserting security, the framework really fits quite well. So security officer and compliance committee. So we already have that infrastructure in place. We're embedding security, we're integrating security a lot more into the compliance committee activities, which then reports directly up to our board of directors. Additionally, written policies and procedures and standards of conduct for following those policies and procedures, so important from a security perspective. Of course, training and education, we're only as strong as our associates. No matter what tools we put in place, you're not completely secure. There's still opportunity for associates to click on the wrong thing, open the wrong thing. So we want to make sure we're enforcing that. Effective lines of communication, as Manji mentioned, we have a very supportive team at the top. I think it's become more supportive as the attacks have increased on Network Health. So with visibility there, we've gotten more engagement at that level, which really helps across the organization. But what we really want to work on going forward is that line of communication all the way up to our board of directors so that they know what we're doing and they're aware of the risks that are out there. And then when it comes to our budget approval, which we do annually with our two owners, they're understanding why we have so much money put in place into our security and compliance and privacy budgets. Of course, enforcement of all the standards. So we put a lot of rules in place about storing. One thing we want to talk about is the storage of PHI in your inboxes and in your mailboxes. But we need to make sure that we're enforcing, and if there's violation of those rules, that we're taking action. And then monitoring and auditing, and then promptly responding to any sort of offense. And with that, so the guidance specifically tells us what to do from a compliance standpoint. If you, again, think of this from the privacy standpoint, it fits quite well. So that you need to have your governing body all the way up to the board of directors in the know about what your compliance security program, what you're accomplishing. And then we need to expect that they have oversight over what we're doing too. So we rely on them to give us feedback if they're seeing a hole or a gap in something that we're doing. And then they should be knowledgeable about the same risks that we are knowledgeable about within our organization. And then as an outcome, we want to make sure that we can gauge the effectiveness of our program. I'd be very interested in what all of you do to document and ensure that you're effective. So in compliance, which I'm sure eventually OCR will get there further from a security standpoint, CMS at this point now is not about just having the program in place. How are you telling them it's effective from the compliance perspective? I think that's where we'll be headed from a securities perspective as well. How can you prove that it's effective? So yes, you've got all the policies, procedures, you're doing the education. Outcome-wise, how do you know it's effective? And again,
Jessica?
An effective program. Yes.
Are you using a tool for your policies and procedures of storage? Are you SharePoint? How are you posting them?
It's a homegrown application.
Okay, me too.
It's a web application.
Anybody,
it's on internet.
You're not happy with a homegrown.
Not good, no.
If anybody has a policy tracker?
That's what it's called, policy tracker. So we switched oversight of policies and procedures into my department. Not something I didn't want to have that documented there, but then from the oversight standpoint, we're ensuring that things are up to date. We've got a clean process for pulling reports. We nag people if it's overdue. So we've got a pretty clean process as far as the oversight, but it's way more work than it should be. It should be a lot more automated. So that's my complaint with it.
Kathy was going to say.
Okay, can I ask a question first?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let Kathy go first. She's my boss.
Some of our plants are using PanViva in the customer call center area, and they're transitioning that to policies and procedures and adding those on. I think Health New England has been using some of that and others. So that may be another option.
PanViva is the name of the vendor, and Support Point is the name of their tool. And the Health Plan Alliance uses it for our policy and procedure, which I'm responsible for.
Good to know.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I love it. I love policies and procedures, Manji, so much.
You're my next best friend.
Absolutely. I have a question. So I think on the previous slide you were saying, what I thought you were saying was that being able to effectively gauge how well the program is working is a challenge. Is that where you were going?
From the security standpoint, from the compliance standpoint, we've put a lot of mechanisms in place because CMS is going to come in, and when they audit us, that's something they're going to ask for. So we're really familiar with doing that on the privacy compliance side, but not really so much as on the security side, at least the documentation and showcase of that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So this is different from like what we were talking about at the end of the day yesterday when we were talking about, have an ethical hacker come in and test whether or not you're cybersecure. You're talking about the security program.
Overall, yeah, and the effectiveness of that program and being able to show and demonstrate that over time, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Last follow-up question. This is a brainstorm / question. Scott, you know how the health plan... I didn't do that on purpose. I'm sorry. You know how the Health Plan Alliance, we have our compliance program effectiveness audit program? Where we all audit each other. Tracy, do you think something like that could work for the security program?
So I'll pitch out. I was one of the two people that founded that compliance effectiveness.
What do you think, Jessica?
Exactly what
you're
talking
about. Do you think?
That's a really great idea.
Do you think
Work? I think it would definitely work. So overall, I'm trying to remember, like 7 years ago, I was just talking with Sarah about it. She was like, I remember working on that the first year. We had like 4 plans, and now there's so many that are involved. But CMS enforced a process where you have to have an objective audit of your compliance program annually. So you think about the cost of that. Unless you have an internal audit that's completely separate from your compliance department, it's difficult to do that. So what we did was gather health plans together, and we audit each other's programs. So that way we're saving. It's pretty expensive to do a full program audit. And so we get together, and then you put what time of year you want to do it, and we audit each other's programs. Really good way to also learn about what other people are doing that's looking better than yours. So it's been a great program. That's a great idea from the security standpoint, too. That would be fun.
Cool.
I can't play cornhole, but I still have good ideas.
Awesome.
You have awesome ideas. That's great. Why?
I'm just thinking about that and how it would work, and I need to learn from Scott and Tracy on how that's worked for us in the past on the other side of the house, because I'm thinking immediately, you know, there's a million different ways to skin a cat and a million different ways to run a security audit or review, and we'd have to figure out what the scope of that would be, how it would be done, et cetera.
Yep, and that's key. That was what was key for us, too. We started it smaller than it needed to be, and we were all nervous. Like, who's going to get the program audit first to see if this is even going to fly by CMS? But it has. It was actually a best practice in our audit in 16. They said that's great, because who would know it better than you than another program who's having to comply with the same. So, and additionally, it is a little bit easier from the scope perspective, however, because they set, we go off of what are they going to audit us on, right? So if we think of it from that perspective, if we set up that scope the same way, what would we be audited on from a security perspective, and then making sure it's a reasonable scope, because time is also a factor, obviously, right? So... very good.
We'll follow up. We'll brainstorm
on that. I love it. Thank you.
And just a question for this program. One is how to get in, and two is what is the difference between this audit and your internal audit team's audit?
So you mean between the program piece I'm talking about with other health plans?
Uh-huh.
So when one of our struggles, or why we started it historically, was because our internal audit team didn't necessarily have the expertise needed to conduct this type of audit. So if we really wanted it to be meaningful for the compliance team, it's most helpful to have someone else who's working in that same space. You can absolutely hire, and people do, you can absolutely hire someone to do it annually, but the cost was what we were trying to mitigate. So that's where we put together this collective group. And this is for the Medicare Advantage space, that it's a requirement. So some of you may be like, I don't know what you're talking about, but that's what it's
we have
focused
all the
on.
Product. So how do get
Kelly
in?
Is
contact
involved.
You?
Kelly from Quartz at your plan, CJ. Kelly was the other person I worked with when we put it together. So, yeah.
Yeah, Sarah on our team is the point person for the MA program audit, and she does the matches between the plans.
Yep. Yeah.
Sarah Nies.
Everyone's going to be able to huddle at one table pretty quick here. Nice and cozy.
If you guys come to this table, that's Kristen is nicely asking you guys. So she does not have to keep carrying the mic.
Okay, but so sorry. So one action item is maybe as part of our work group that we're going to be forming, maybe we can look at whether or not we can develop a similar type of program.
Yeah,
that would be great. Okay, now we're going to talk about privacy and compliance structure.
Can you pop back one slide? I didn't really. So again, just to highlight the translation to the guidance. If you have an effective program in place, you're going to prevent, from a compliance standpoint, fraud, waste, and abuse issues. On the same, if you've got an effective security program in place, you'll hopefully be preventing incidents. And so the focus is really on detecting and preventing issues, and then implementing any sort of corrective action, taking response to those actions from an incident response standpoint. And then I just like to share structure. People talk a lot about structure. I have up here the structure of the compliance team, so I'm down there in that middle kind of the connector to all of the different facets. I report directly to our chief administrative officer. I know that means different things at different plans, but she's really kind of all the periphery admin areas like HR, compliance, that type of focus. And then I'm a direct report up to the board of directors, so I quarterly go in front of the board. And that's where we can see that opportunity for integration with security, where that connection is right there to the board. So all the minutes from our committee, of course, gets reported directly to the board of directors. And so more focus on security in that committee will be effective going forward. Also, in the bottom corner there, the quality assurance team, that was a new addition into my area. That used to be a separate arm of the organization, but we want to really focus not just on auditing, but what can we do from an oversight monitoring standpoint. Additionally, if you're in the self-funded space, there's a lot of SLAs in those agreements, which require a lot more ongoing focus and monitoring, where they want report outs on a regular basis. So that's really where that team is coming from. Additionally, our state. We are one of the two organizations who will be within our service area able to provide insurance for the state employees. There was a bit larger pool, but a lot of the bigger players pulled out. So it's a great opportunity for our organization. But with that, they've got some tough parameters of what we needed to be doing for monitoring. So that team will really focus on that as well.
This, adding on to what she says, this is our philosophy also. This is how we're trying to run an information security program. Look at things which you can do to prevent, then detect, respond, and governance. some of the things which are part of our security stacks are listed here. I went through some of them already. We're doing pen test now. And thank you to Susan for sharing your results with us. That would be a good way to to check where we land up. On the detection side, our data center hosts CDW, and they have their own IDS, IPS also. We have the SOC going, Qualys, Netrix, IRT, Jess is going to talk more about this. We have a good incident response in place now. We have a team at the management level and at the lower level also. Incident response plan, I already talked about that. We had some challenges there. I'm still struggling on how to make sure I can actually document 80% of the things which can happen. So people know if something is happening, this is what they have to do. I think at a management level, we have a good handle. I forgot a multi-plan lady when she was talking about, she mentioned like communication is a bigger challenge. But we have a good process in place from a communication perspective. Now I need to take it to the next level of how do I list down step-by-step instructions also.
Right, so that's an exercise we're working on this year is now that we have a defined IR plan, is the playbooks. And we just had a brainstorming session in our cybersecurity work group of let's talk about the top things that could potentially hit the network or happen to affect the network, and then develop a playbook of this is how we operate when these types of things happen. Some of them will bubble up to senior management, some of them will not, depending on severity. And that is, it's a big exercise to go through at any size company.
Some of the tools which we're using now, I can share with you guys, but one tool is Everbridge. We're configuring it if there's an incident going on and I have to reach out, I want to reach out to all 500 of my employees. The tool can send you a call or a text message, and we're tying it with our HR system, so it has up-to-date contact information, etc. Governance, policies and procedure. Manjinder Singh loves policies and procedures.
He has to say that three times. That's part of the therapy that we have him in.
I was presenting in front of all our management. We have this quarterly meeting. I was presenting there. My CEO was there, CAO, and I said, I hate that. And both of them looked up, what? I'm like, sorry, I love that.
Yep.
So we do. We think we're doing in a good exercise on security awareness. But that's another thing. We have one topic which we wanna pick your brain on what you guys are doing. So I do send out emails, campaigns, telling them what's going on in the world. Do not click on this. But we wanna know more about how you are making sure your associates are. Learning or understanding the importance of all these security incidents. Assessment, remediation, we came up with that remediation plan out of coal fire assessment. We came up with 1 year, which took care of high critical deficiencies. And we have plans for remaining also. Vendor security review, it's ironic, the assessment listed that as one of our strong areas. So we have a good process in place. When we onboard a new vendor, we do a risk assessment on that, and we do an annual risk assessment also. But I still think there's a lot of opportunities for improvement on that. That's where I was picking up your brain also on what kind of questionnaire you ask them and how do you monitor. That's another thing which we want to pick your brain on.
So we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking through the overlap between privacy and security and compliance. So from a reporting perspective, our issue reporting database is one and the same. So that's filtered through the compliance department. So what that means is if someone detects some sort of privacy compliance security issue, it's going to get reported through the same system. That's where we're then communicating with the security team versus the privacy team, depending on what the incident is. And we immediately engage IS because obviously those are time sensitive to review. Additionally, we have to partner through a lot of project work. We recognize each other's expertise and pull each other in if we're missing within projects, particularly in our organization. We're not very large, so it's a lot of the same people at the table, but it's amazing how at times a key area is left out. So we're really good at bringing each other in and evolving each other in those processes. Additionally, training and education, there's so much overlap between the programs, and you know, you focus on wanting a culture of security, a culture of privacy, a culture of compliance. They all intersect, and so you really need a culture of all of those things. So we combine a lot of our training and education and partner from that from an opportunity standpoint. When we're touching associates, we want to make sure they're thinking about all of those things, but in a digestible way. So we partner and review each other's trainings, ensure that there's overlap where it should be, and that we're in agreement with the messaging that we're trying to promote. Additionally, as I mentioned, we've got our privacy and security, now privacy, security, and compliance committee, where we're intersecting and involving our two teams together. Additionally, it's very quick when I'm on the slides. Isn't he quick? He just goes right to the next one. From the committee standpoint, I did want to spend a minute on the VPC. So we've got our Vice President's Council that Manji mentioned, and so it is just that. It's a committee of just the Vice Presidents within our organization, which right now is 11 people on that committee. And we meet monthly, and we review all the policies and procedures from a security, privacy, and compliance standpoint. So that's a really good place to engage the leadership at that executive level so that they can help us champion. Additionally, if Manji's going to roll out a tool, that's going to be a bit of an annoyance. So we want to move so quick, it's going to be something that's going to slow the business down. He gets engagement at that level and make sure that they're understanding it. So that can be in addition to our privacy security committee, which is mostly at the director level, that VPC can really be our champions across the organization. And they give us, if they don't like what we're doing, they definitely give us that feedback as well. It's not a quiet group. So it works really well to have that engagement at that level and that peer group. Additionally, we've been talking a little bit about our IRT. So this is the IRT. It's our Chief Legal Officer, Chief Compliance and Privacy Officer. That's me, Manji, of course, and then our Chief Information Officer. So anytime there's an issue that could impact 25 or more individuals, or if it's some sort of security issue where it's unknown, that team is assembling. So we're on text together. We get together quite frequently and informally if we need to, in order to make sure that we're communicating about any issues. And then additionally, which I've really welcomed, over the past year, we implemented a process where if I'm going to report something to OCR that involves 25 or more individuals, they're reviewing to make sure I'm not missing anything from the security or legal perspective that could make that look different. So it's just really good to have that cross-functional interplay for that type of work. And it's been really helpful for us to have that team where we are working through an issue that we're experiencing right now. And it's really good to have the multi-perspectives involved to give feedback. Now you can change. additionally, there's some overlap from the FDR standpoint. So if you're in Medicare Advantage space or in the on the health exchange, you're probably more familiar with what an FDR is. Particularly if you're in Medicare Advantage, because they've been drilling that down our throats for many years. But we have a pretty strong oversight program, mainly because you have to if you're in that space. If you're audited by CMS, they're going to ask who are your first-tier downstream and related entities. But that's a great opportunity. If you have all of those documented, those are your core vendors. You can't be in this space and have a core vendor who doesn't qualify as one of those first-tier downstream-related entities. So as it relates to the touches we have with those vendors, we've now integrated security into those touches. So twice a year, we're reaching out and issuing attestations to those groups, and so now we'll be involving security questions as well. So Manji kind of talked about the onboarding piece where up front we're asking for a bunch of information, but so much changes within an organization, particularly some of the larger ones like your PBM. It's amazing they'll be doing one thing from a security standpoint at the beginning of the year and then have no reason to really update you and tell you, so it's good to have those attestations implemented in on a regular basis. The other big thing that came up yesterday, I believe, in conversation was offshore subcontracting. We want to make sure, particularly in the government program space, you have to report offshore subcontractors of any of your FDRs. So you need to be asking on a regular basis, because when you first contract with them, they may in fact not be using offshore subcontracting, and then 6 months later they are, and don't always think to look in the BAA to see that they need to report that to you, and in that case you would be out of compliance with CMS. So really the opportunity here is to be integrating those touches. If you're already making the touches from the government programs perspective, you can implement security into that process as well. Additionally, when we audit any of our vendors, so we have a process where we do a risk assessment on each of our FDRs annually. So those that hit higher risk level, so like our PBM, every year we're auditing them, we need to continue to integrate security into what the audit focus is, where historically we were more focused on our own stuff, on the compliance aspects of the program. So lots of opportunity to partner there. Additionally, compliance role, we have the oversight for business associate agreements. So as privacy officer, I sign every BAA for the organization. Historically, probably 5 years ago, I implemented that process just because the red lines that come in are very familiar. You get a rhythm with how you're doing it, and it's really important that key red lines that may not seem like a big deal from a reporting standpoint to a business owner are a big, big deal to my team, and I need to make sure that particularly from the incident reporting standpoint, as was mentioned, I believe, in a presentation yesterday, it's a big deal if there's not enough leeway. You only have 60 days to do your investigation, so if a vendor has 45 to give you a notice, you're going to be in trouble when it comes to that portion. So I'm really tight about how we review those business associate agreements, and they all filter through my team. Talked about oversight audits and risk assessment.
Jessica, a question about your BAA. So you say you send every BAA.
Everyone, yeah.
So you have your own company's BAA, right?
We have a template, And so anytime we drive our template, unless it's, again, there's some vendors out there that absolutely will refuse, and then in that case we redline theirs. But we always use our template.
So if you deal with big players on the market, so for example, Microsoft, they refuse to send your BAA, they have their own BAA. Are you still the person sending it, but do you work with legal team, or you just review it?
Work with legal team. I work with legal team on anything I'm uncomfortable with. There's the same red lines that I'm used to seeing as pushback. That's usually how you can tell if someone reads the BAA. There's so many vendors that just sign it. But it's very pro-network health, as it would be if it's your template, right? So I can tell if people are reading it or not based on the red lines that we see. But there are things that are important to me, and it makes it a lot easier for me to do my job if we're using our template based on what we're expecting of those organizations. But then from the oversight standpoint, if we're not thinking they're reading it, that's where we need to be a little bit tighter in our enforcement, because I do want to make sure they're reporting incidents in a timely manner if it's going to impact privacy or compliance.
Thank you.
I want to add one thing. One of the reasons we have been able to accomplish so much in this short period on our security program is because of our relationship with the compliance department. I could see you guys have the same kind of relationship also. We care so much about compliance. Look how much time I spend on putting that picture together.
Yeah.
I spend zero.
Imagine who did the details in this presentation between the two of us. Can we just take a guess on that? I'll give you... What? My glasses create a glare.
Oh my word. Okay. All right. Okay, you look fabulous, and then you're gonna come a little bit forward.
Okay, great.
What? Everybody look like you're having fun.
How are we doing on the time?
All right, we talked a lot about FDR oversight. I don't know if there's any questions on that process. Any questions? All right. So we partner on the needs assessment. Mainly, our focus now has been on being a lot more proactive with the vendors that we're choosing. I think when you, especially when you're moving so many things forward so quickly, you tend to just be a little bit more lax, and we're learning that that's not the best way to be, of course, from the vendor standpoint. So we've tightened up that program. And a lot of that also is attributed to our chief legal officer. So as long as I've been with the organization, we've always used outside counsel for legal help, which is great in some respects. You've got access to 10 to 15 different attorneys versus having one in-house and having it filtered through that person. But she's been a lot more helpful internally in driving messages that we need to drive from a legal and compliance standpoint. So a lot of that can be attributed to the hiring of her. Additionally, it's required if the vendor meets the requirements of an FDR to do a pre-delegation audit. And so we've incorporated, as Manji mentioned, our security assessment into that pre-delegation audit. So really you're assessing their ability to be compliant with the regulations and their ability to perform for you. So we do spend quite a bit of time on the front end, which doesn't always make the business happy, but long term it's what's best for the organization. So I'll take this slide.
Sure. Let me just add this. This was for Kristen. My two rules have been, rule number one, boss is always right. Rule number two, if no, follow rule number one. Lately, I modified it, boss and Jess is always right.
He wants help with something right after this. Let me tell you, my budget is due or something, I'm telling you. Involvement, increasing the presence of privacy and security. So we want to make sure that the organization recognizes us and looks to us as a resource. So we really partner on that as well. We have a process, and I'm sure a lot of you have been doing this for years, but it was newer to Network Health about a year and a half ago, where all of our communications go on our in-network page, it's called. So it's basically a posting and a feed where you go for information every day. And our pictures, as executives, we all have our little headshots, and if we're going to post a message, educational message, our headshot is there, and it'll say what your title is, or if I'm sending it from a privacy standpoint, it'll be chief privacy officer. So we want to really make sure that people are recognizing us as teams to come to if you need help, if you have a concern, or you have an idea from a privacy security standpoint. Please come to us. We talked a lot about involvement on committees. We're involved in really every committee that we have within your organization in some capacity. We've really done a lot of work from an alignment standpoint. As VP of Administrative Services, I'm working always with my boss to make sure we've got the right committees. I don't know about your organizations, but sometimes we get a little bit committee happy where then all of a sudden there's a committee for this, and then there's like three subcommittees, and then there's like, we're all talking about the same thing. So we really try to keep quite tight oversight on, if you want to start a committee, we want to understand what you're doing, because if it can fit into an existing committee, that's what we're going to do, because it's much more effective. We're not a huge organization. We can't be, not communicating and aligning. So that's something that we've really tightened up on. Additionally, we've talked about training, and we really tailor our annual training event. Specifically, we tailor one event annually specific to that compliance committee. So we really want that group, in addition to the VPC, to be the stakeholders for the organization that also can speak to privacy, security, and compliance. So every year, we call it Compliance Boot Camp. And we bring in lunch, and we do a specific training for that group so that they're super engaged and that they understand the importance of their role. And a lot of times we're spending time on topics that they're interested in. Vendor oversight, particularly the roles and responsibility from the business end, come up. We talk about that annually. Also, on frequent occasion, we've done this probably 4 years, that boot camp, I'll just review with them, what is your responsibility from a compliance committee member standpoint? Why do we have you sitting in this room? Well, obviously it's required, but it's not because we just want you to sit here and listen to us talk to you. We need engagement from this committee. So we really are prescriptive about what their responsibilities are. One more thing, Manj, then you can go. We have our annual privacy and training event. Like many of you, I'm sure you celebrate Compliance Week. That's just another great opportunity to include security in your awareness in that week activity. So we do various things. Usually it involves food, meet and greets, just to build awareness across the organization and to make sure that we're connecting with the associates on at least an annual basis directly with them at that meeting. Now you can go.
So all of us have this challenge. How do we make sure all of our associates always understand the importance of security, not to click on anything, not to open anything unnecessary. So I use some of these slides in one of my quarterly meetings with the management meeting to show them what people like me are scared of, what is keeping my CEO awake at night. So I wanted to share this with you guys also. These are some stats. But basically, the point I was trying to drive was everybody looks at it, employees as a weakest link, but that they can become our strongest asset in this journey also. So then I walked them through a typical phishing example, and the goal here was to show if you get a phishing email, you're probably going to do one of these three things, but if you look at it, the common element here is a human vulnerability. I can have all sort of downstream mitigating controls, but that's one thing I cannot really control. So then we showed them, like if you click an email, if you click on a phishing email, what is going to happen? One of these three scenarios are going to happen. They have no idea, they don't care, or they report it to us. So we have a mechanism in place today where they report it to us. A lot of these people send it directly to me also. So we're doing good on that. But the point here was to show them if you report it to us, we have a better chance of controlling the damage. This is a similar thing trying to tell them, if you don't tell us that exposure, it will take us longer time to find that exposure as compared to if you tell us right away. This culture thing is the most important thing. I never used to believe in that, but now, since we're the geek, we can put tens of hundreds of tools in place, but until and unless everybody start thinking about it, that how important it is, when somebody knocks at my door, I do not open the door at my hub, right? I look at it. That's the message we're trying to drive also. If you get an email, don't be in a rush to just reply back to it. Even if you think that it's coming from a CEO asking to do a wire transfer, pick up the phone to make sure you verify before you do anything.
And one thing that I think is an important message that Manji continues to drive at the management level and across the organization is that he says security is a team sport. It's not really just for the security department. It needs to be across the organization. So that's a line that our president has been saying now as well as she's gotten more and more engaged in the security program. But it really, really does paint a good picture for how we want the atmosphere to be at our organization.
One of the
I just want to kind of make a comment to the table on how important policy and procedures are. We had we had an employee who received email from our CEO, our CEO's email address, and saying, well, please wear this one to this organization. It's 126,000. It's even below his his delegation's authority. So that employee had no idea of this is from outside company because even IT kept saying security, IT didn't ever come to our department present any training. But we had a procedure. So when she followed the procedure, so okay, so she's like, I'm not going to go ahead and file it. I need to serve this for approval. And we found out, so someone else catch up because there are different step of controls that are saying, well, you know, we have a policy, we have a code of conduct is this type of transaction will never go through email. So that's when we started to report to IT and found out actually that's a phishing. So that's why you need to have controls there, need to have policy and procedure there.
Right, very good point. Adding on to that, you need to have controls and policies. You need to make sure people are aware of it also. Mm-hmm. And you need to somehow paint a picture that if you are, one of my favorite examples is, and I'm passionate about it, is the tailgating thing. You know, people want to keep the door open for the next person because they think it's a polite thing to do. I have become a security czar in that respect. Every time I see that, I stop them. I tell them, no, you have to scan it. And I tried explaining it to them. When you are opening the door for somebody, you are bringing down, you're bypassing one of my physical controls. You have to understand that. So that's a good point.
He does not discriminate either. We went out to lunch the other day, and we're walking in, and he's like, badge in. Like, we're walking in. The privacy officer, we're walking in together. You have to still badge in. He stopped the president at one point, too. So he does not discriminate on following that procedure. So that's good.
We have to lead by examples. We want everybody hating us. So this is the same thing. We're trying to make sure everybody start thinking like information security professional, right? We're all in this together. This is our home. If we want to protect it, we need everybody equal participation. Okay, if you guys don't have any questions, we have questions.
Why don't we ask if they have questions first?
Yes.
Questions.
This has been an interactive session anyways. I guess one of the things which we want to find out from you guys is how do you handle PHI in your emails, on your file servers? Do you have policies? How do you address a salesperson who's saying, like, no, I need this. I need my 10 years worth of emails or 6 years worth of email because I have the data which I use that. So how to strike a balance in an ideal world, I should be able to see. I should be able to say from an IT perspective, if you need the data, I'll reproduce it for you. But then we already have a big bandwidth, less bandwidth of existing projects. So how do you strike that balance?
I wish I had an answer. I just want to stand next to you in solidarity and say we have the exact same issue. You know, I think someone hit on it before, the data retention policies are key.
Yeah.
I think if we can get those defined and then work with senior management to explain the risk and then have an alternative for some exceptions, that's the step. But we're going to have to spend time in the same situation. As far as the PHI creep, I think our best option, we're implementing data loss prevention, and you had mentioned Varonis that you guys are using. So any tool that can help define where those are at to get a lockdown, but then to go back to policy and procedure, it's got to be defined prior.
And we're looking at another product called Veritas. I have it in the budget. It's like 10 grand a year. It's very cheap. But what happens with us is somebody will send out a new, I don't know, let's say it's scheduled benefits. So just say that, right? Sends it to me. I send it to four people on my config team because they've got to do it. Every department head received it, and they sent it to their team. With Veritas, it takes that one document and places it and points to it. So I only have one copy of it on the server, and then everybody gets to it that way. They don't even know that it's happening. So I'm looking at that product. It's kind of cool. It's also got some archiving. Another thing with the emails archiving, the search will take my help desk guy all day to find that one that was 2 years ago on this date, and it had this person's name in it. Really? But they have to have it. So it's such a hard balance. And, of course, I don't know with you guys, but your number one email-sized hog is the president. Am I going to go to that corner office and say, Matt, you've got to get rid of your emails? Oh, no.
I think of finding that alternative, like we're a very good, like our mission statement is no versus no and explaining the why, but then being able to have an alternative for those exceptions. We can't just roadblock it. We have to make sure that's a speed bump, but it is a struggle and you know, it's going to take a while to get there. I would hope that as we approach this in our organization, you know, we'll go through the legal channels of what's the legal risk of maintaining everything since the beginning of time.
So we recently implemented a policy, well, a process, I should say, where we expected everyone to go in and clean out the old PHI. So we're not asking them to get rid of everything, you know, if you need emails for audit purposes, but go through and filter. It was not well received, the message, I'll tell you that, but we had the support from the top to get it done. So essentially we issued an ordinance that within the next 2 weeks we need you to go through and filter, start with reports first, because you know, some of it is just old practice. Like I used to get a census report that has all this PHI on it, and that was the process. It went to seven people in our department, and I just never deleted that out of my inbox. So we enforce that. It's gone better after we've done more education. And then really what it has been is my team, Manji's team, meeting with the departments to see what are your business needs, how can we change your current practice. So instead of sending something back and forth via email, can we have it in a secure place where multiple people have it, but then we're good about deleting it when we don't need that information. So it's kind of changing those old practices, but it certainly takes a while to shift the culture.
Yeah,
I like that idea. So that's
and
awesome.
I can attest to that, having implemented that. I mean, its true intent was to reduce storage space, but what ends up happening as a side benefit, especially if you're running an exchange environment where you have Outlook clients out at the house and you're allowing auto discovery, so people literally can use an unprotected computer, download an entire copy of their mailbox to their personal computer, and then they've got PHI sitting there. Well, if they ever leave, they can't get access to that storage vault any longer, which means that PHI is no longer present. So they may have the subjects and the headlines and stuff from the emails, but at least all of those files are still locked away in the vault, so to speak. And then the other comment I'll make is with respect to data loss or data leakage prevention, even the most mature environments have struggles with that because even just a name in the subject line quantifies as one of the 19 EPHI measures. And you can go out and look and debate with people all day long as to whether that's a violation or not, but unless you somehow are able to do some custom programming to add context, like there's a physician name somewhere or another element, it's a challenge. Right. And so we've just made the decision internally to focus on the most blatant things because we think that's the worst sin. And the names we're just kind of ignoring for right now. If it's got an MD or a PhD, we'll go ahead and flag that. But the rest of the stuff, at least for today, until we maybe have another tuning session with our vendor, you have to pick what the most blatant thing is. I'd rather work on 80% of the issues than 20.
This is super helpful because it's reassuring because we get some feedback from some members on the management team, like my previous organization, we didn't handle any PHI inboxes. I'm like, where did you work? I mean, this is the nature of what we do. So,
What we found helpful for that struggle you said for the email, we gave size limitation. So we gave, you know, we define business purpose and we gave size limitation. So what actually it helped me figure out is I had a mindset is I need this because, you know, I work with multiple department, but I often get noticing where you're approaching your sales limit. Of course, that means other employees, they have the similar situation, and you tend to delete all these big files, email. Yeah, maybe that one you can explore.
Thank you.
We have the same size limitations on the exchange mailboxes, but people tend to just archive, so then they're just shifting from one spot to another, but at least it's centralized, you know.
Yeah.
And I think everything that you're doing from the top down is the right approach. It's our mission in InfoSec. We always say, get a seat at the table, top down. And I've said it a couple of times already, with Tracy and Scott, they've done such a great job of not just top down, but lateral, and getting the departmental understanding and support that just really helps, like you mentioned, you know, leadership and above doing first, because then you've got the buy-in and the support already.
So one more thing you have to remember too, I worked for a health system, so this was on the provider side, but the government came in and did an audit, and it was just a routine audit, but they had extra years of files that they should have destroyed, and the government took those and assessed, brought that right into the audit.
Oh, yeah, because you had it, right? If you have
because
it, it's still there.
So it's important to just from that perspective to record retend.
Yes, that's good.
And
that's
think we do a great job with record retention paper, but we don't do a good job with data. Electronic files.
Complex.
And to be honest, I think compliance is probably the worst department because we keep every single thing.
You might need it.
I have got emails from early 2000s, you know? So I'm probably the worst one.
Yes, right. Yeah,
and
sure.
Scott and Wyatt and I were just talking about that. We need to, from compliance, we need to start cleaning out our stuff, and then we can tell them to do it because, you know, we need to start
do
with
as
us
I say,
first.
Not as I do. Huh?
Yeah.
You know, you guys are talking inboxes, email.
I have the issue of getting a meeting request with a member name in
it. Oh, yeah. Or saving on the
claim number. And, you know, everybody's got their mobile devices. Yeah. Now that claim number is outside the building, you know. So it's just, it's continually training these people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's exactly, this space is cheap. We just keep adding more hard drives, you know, and it just, it's electronic age. Now, how do we get it under control? Because we've given up control. I'm one of the worst. I know where that email's 2 years ago. Here you go. This is why I configured what we did, but I'm telling everybody else, go back 6 months. Now, the health system has put in every 6 months, they archive people's email and delete it. Okay. Yeah. So they've been a hard stop.
I'll just say one last thing. I like the idea of Kristen's idea of...
Likes my idea.
Okay. Kristen's idea of creating cooperative information security audit. But I'm sure it's going to take time. It has to go through legal and all that. But at the least, if we can have some kind of work group kind of session where we're talking to each other about these tools, what you're doing to take care of those
challenges.
Well, Susan
and CJ and Jessica all volunteered to co-chair that committee.
I'm
kidding.
I volunteer also.
No, it'll be good.
That will be good.
So, well, thank you very much. Let's do a nice clap for network.